Hello everyone, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today we're going to talk about judo styles around the world. Very interesting topic, right Peter?
That's right, because as a lot of you know, judo is a very popular sport around, practice around the world, and then each country has a different style based on the history and then the folk wrestling style they have. And we are fortunate to have someone like Shintaro who's traveled around the world and, you know, trained a lot of these people.
Yep. And you, Peter, who's a Korean judoka.
Yeah, I know.
Korean American judoka.
I did train in Korea a little bit, and I follow them closely, so I can also talk about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool thing, right? Because there's so many different fingerprints. Like, for instance, you have a Korean style judo, right? That's what you came to the dojo with.
Right.
You did some training in Korea, and I have mostly a Japanese style judo.
Right.
And then there's sort of that American thing going on, which definitely we have been influenced by the great American judoka. So it's like a Japanese Korean American judo style,
right?
And it's a hybrid thing.
Yeah, I think my style, you can't really pinpoint, like, because I do a lot of things that Korean, typically known for Koreans to do. But at the same time,
I used to
more, but then now I'm since training, starting to train with you, I've adjusted my style a little bit. It's worked out well for me so far.
I don't think there's a right or wrong when it comes to this stuff, right? And you know, every country is affected, like you said, about the different folk style wrestling styles. And you know, every country is influenced by the champion that comes out of that place, right? For instance, like, I know Mongolia is a, you know, place that's very affected by the native wrestling styles. And they had an Olympic gold medalist who became a coach and then affected everybody's judo style because everyone started learning from him.
Right.
And stuff like that happens all over the world. And when you have a trained eye, you could see the very differences in each of the places.
Right. There's a cool documentary on, you can find it on YouTube, where Ono Shohei actually goes to visit Mongolia and then tries out their folk style wrestling, and it's very interesting.
I love that. It's really interesting.
Their jacket, because they wear this jacket where it only covers their shoulders essentially and the back, like the upper part of the back. So their grip style is like that, right? Like, you basically, they kind of like hug you.
Over the shoulder, around the triceps. That's their favorite thing. You can't grab a lapel, because there really is no lapel like that goes down the body.
Right.
You know, upper part of the scap, the collarbone, you could grab it. And, you know, if you fight collar and tricep, high collar and tricep, it's not very common. And then, you know, if you've never fought a Mongolian, it's very, very, very tricky, right?
And it shows in judo. They go for a lot of these, you know, hip throws based on the tricep grips, and not just not really the traditional like lapel and sleeve grip.
Mongolian wrestling is a incredible art, you know, and it's amazing how popular it is over there, you know, with the Genghis Khan and all this stuff.
I know.
And, you know, it's one of the most popular sports. I think it's horseback riding, archery, and wrestling. Those are the three main country sports, right. They don't really like, let's go watch basketball or play soccer. Like, those are the three main sports, you know what I mean? And everyone does those sports. And they have an annual tournament. I forgot what the wrestling style was called, but they have an annual tournament, and it's no weight classes. And all you got to do is take the person down, essentially.
Nice.
And it's amazing, man. And like you said, the Shohei Ono documentary is great. And they heavily, heavily influenced their sumo style, too. So they do sumo style. They do freestyle wrestling. Mm-hmm. They start with that generally, and everybody does that wrestling. And then they branch off into other grappling arts, and then they take a lot from their original folk style, which has been around forever, is one of the coolest things.
And Mongolia produces a lot of top sumo players too, right? Like you said,
a lot of the yokozuna in Japan, a lot of them.
That's crazy. I think that's such an interesting thing. Like, you start with this space art, and then you, as you go along, I mean, Mongolia has a good wrestling team too, just like the Greco-Romans, and then the freestyle, and then
freestyle
judo
wrestling.
Also. Yeah, it's very interesting. And then all these styles, how they show up. And you've practiced Mongolians in, like, when you visit training camps in Japan too, right?
You know, I went to a tournament in Jeju Island mm-hmm. in Korea. And then it was like an international tournament, and the French national team was there, the Mongolian national team was there, and I've never really trained with a bunch of Mongolians before, so I was like, all right, I'm going to try to get as many rounds in with the Mongolians.
Right.
And man, they were really tricky. They were really cool, man. Even before the practice started, they were wrestling.
Oh, just hanging out and wrestling.
They were just wrestling, yeah. Hanging out, wrestling, pushing each other out of bounds, putting each other's hands on the floor. They were doing sumo. They were doing like Mongolian wrestling. They were just joking around and playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so doing that for like 20 minutes.
It's so ingrained in their culture, just like,
yeah, I think that's what they do.
Yeah,
you know, they live on these big planes and they're like, hey, let's wrestle. We'll go around. So yeah,
that's
it was
amazing.
It was very difficult, and I had the chance to go with Naidan, who was an Olympic gold medalist, and man,
right.
was he tough. He was unbelievable, you know.
What kind of moves did he try to do on you?
You know, this is the thing. Like, I have a whole gripping system. He doesn't grip. He'll just let you grab wherever, and then he'll just reach around the back with one arm and then grab a tricep, and then he starts trying to swing you around, right?
Oh,
trying to
swing
you around, throw his hips in real hard. You know, he's not trying to do the small foot sweeps and, you know, faking the techniques. He just throws his hips across.
I see.
And, you know, it's very, very cool. I really, really enjoyed it. You know,
I see.
Because it's something that I'm not very used to.
Right.
You know? So using a lot of momentum, swinging the person around and trying to clip the legs out so mm-hmm. then the person rotates. Things like mm-hmm. that, like, I've never really experienced. You know?
Right. And
I think I should use some of that stuff, right? The more I get older,
yeah.
right, I'm limited by, you know, my mobility and stuff. And some of those techniques didn't require you to be able to lift a leg high or, you know,
right.
something like that. So, you know, that's the value of going international and mm-hmm. seeing all the different styles, you know?
So in that sense, like, do you think, in a way, the traditional Japanese style requires a little more agility and flexibility?
Yeah, because the Japanese don't really, they never used to grip fight, but let's right. talk about Japanese styles now.
Yeah.
Right? Now they have put a lot of focus on it, and, you know, they would usually link up 50-50, do some adjustments, right? Adjustment mm-hmm. in position to gain advantage, and then they would have one or two throws that they were masters at.
Right. right?
And that sort of style puts a shelf life if you're just relying on crazy fast explosive uchimata, let's say, with your leg going to the ceiling, you know, in a 6 p.m. sort of configuration where your leg is pointing at the sky. That stuff, like, if that's what you do, you know, you're not gonna be able to do that past a certain age.
Right.
For instance, another one, like, if Abe, the Sode Sayanagi, if he dislocates his right shoulder, he's not gonna be able to rely on that kind of a style anymore. He'd have to completely reinvent himself. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh yeah, he really puts his hip in, and it's a crazy. It's almost like a contortionist, almost. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've known people in Japan who have an unbelievable taiyo, and then they blew their knee out because someone rolled on top of their leg, and now they can't rely on that taiyo, and now, you know, everything that they've done, right? Mm-hmm. Not really gripping,
right.
not really fighting for advantage, putting two hands on and trying to explode into that taitoshi really fast, you know, whether it be timing based or, you know, reaction based. Now they can't do that anymore, and now they're done, right? So, yeah, Japan does have that kind of a style, right? They've always been that kind of a thing. But more and more you see people increase in their range of judo. For instance, like Maruyama, who does, you know, Tomonage also.
Uchimaru, yeah.
Uchimaru also. And then you have a guy like Kato. He's not so well known because he never really went international. But he took second in the All Japans. I think he won All Japans too. He's a 90 guy. And he has unbelievable newaza. And he does zero Japanese judo.
I see.
Like zero. You ever see him?
No, I don't think I know Kato that well.
Yeah. He went to Kokushikan University.
Oh, okay.
And he has an unbelievably weird style.
Uh-huh.
And I went to, I know him since Kokushikan High School because I used to go there in the summers. And then the coach would say, hey, this is a thing. This is a system. This is what you got to do. You have to learn these throws. And he'd say, nah, not for me. He's like,
maverick.
I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was such a maverick. And then he was never, you know, he got held back a little bit, right? In terms of, like,
right.
I want to be on the team. I want to be on the competitive team. They're like, nah, nah. But he's like, I could win. But because he wasn't so compliant, right?
I see.
He went against the grain and he developed his own style, which is like unbelievable. His newaza, tomonage, sumigaeshi, the stuff he does, you've never seen anyone from Japan do, you know, and no one really knows him. He has a couple of international medals.
Right.
But, you know, he's a small 90 kilo guy.
Right, right.
He's kind of like me, a small 100 kilo guy. So he didn't have that much success internationally because he was very small. And he's not like insanely strong like some of these 100 kilo guys coming out of Japan, right?
Right.
So he didn't really rely on his, you know, physical strength and explosivity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got a guy like that in sort of the Japanese coaching staff, you know, closer to the top, and he starts teaching his students his specific style, you'll see a shift in you know, the type of athletes that come out. And, you know, who knows? I don't think he's going to go that route.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I would love to see something like that. You know?
Yeah. But see, you know, the traditional Japanese style kato went against was that upright 50-50, starting from 50-50, kind of relying on the techniques and whatnot, right? And I think the point is that like the emphasis of Japanese judo style is that they don't try to rely much on strength, really. They try to rely on the techniques and the agility, explosiveness.
Yeah. I mean, that's misleading too, right? Because it's like... you know, strength and power is important in judo.
Right.
You link up and you connect it to the person. You have to be strong to pull them off balance.
Right.
And technique. And, you know, it does require a crazy amount of explosiveness to be able to dive into an uchimata.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And so that, like you said, when you went to Jeju Island in Korea, you also saw the French national team. And, you know, France is another powerhouse of judo. We always have a lot of visitors from France, and they have a completely different style of judo than we are used to. So did you get to train with the French national team there at all?
Yeah, definitely. Renner was on the mat, which is really cool. I'm not going with Renner. You know, I'm a lot smaller than him, and he didn't really want to go with me. But, you know, the French are very, very educated in judo, I think.
Right.
It's just a very educated crowd. I went to the World Championships in France, and... You know, it was a full stadium. Like, it was like a full-blown sports.
Yeah,
it was a packed stadium. It was like a six-day event. Yeah. Every day they had a different weight class competing, and the thing was full. You know, they had the prelims, and they had the finals, and they had the national singer. It was like a Mariah Carey of, you know, France coming out and singing. And it was a crazy thing, and these kids would come up to you and ask for your autograph, you know?
Oh, wow.
And they're just such a knowledgeable crowd in judo. And then if you're doing judo against a Frenchman, and then if you're kind of stalling, everyone would be like, oh, boo, Shido penalty, like the passive, you know? And they'll do that because they just know
judo. The rules and whatnot,
They know the rules. They know judo. To become a judo coach, you need like a degree. There's like a judo degree, a special training. They have like, if you're in high school, you're doing like, you know, the graduation project.
Right.
If you pick, you know, a sport, you have to, there's like a whole slew of, it's a very, very rich academic curriculum judo in France. And there's a million active competitors in France.
Right.
So I think the judo Frenchmen are very, very knowledgeable.
Right.
And I think you see a very wide range of judoka in France.
Right.
You know, I just watched somebody, I can't remember who it was, a French person doing judo. And, you know, they were attacking from losing position, you know, very, very successfully going for sumi and tomonage and stuff like that and winning position, top high collar and going for Osoto and Harai and big throws.
Right.
You know, it was very, it was incredible. Right. So the French have amazing judo.
Yeah. And
absolutely amazing.
And, you know, I've become like really close friends with some of the people that came through from France to our dojo in New York City. Yeah. And I've actually asked them like, oh my God, like, why is judo so popular in France? And then they kind of thought about it for a bit. And then they basically said, you know, the culture is, apparently if you kind of peel off the exterior, the French culture has a lot of common elements with Japanese culture. So apparently things like judo work well with the French culture. And they really like it. Apparently French people grew up watching anime too, a lot of anime.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Thibaut told me that. Thibaut told me,
do they eat sushi in France?
I think I've seen sushi restaurant. Whenever I visit France, I don't try to go find a sushi place, but I'm sure they do. I know in Italy, when I went to Italy, which is another judo powerhouse, they have their favorite thing to do with sushi is all you can eat sushi. So you pay like, I don't know, 30 euros, whatever. And then you just keep ordering sushi, like the raw fish and whatnot. That was a good dish. Well, yeah, the French, another strong powerhouse. And so you're in Jeju Island in Korea. Yeah. So I'm sure you ran into some Korean players.
The Koreans are very good, man. Very good.
They
have a lot of drop seinagi, Korean seinagi. They love the go under the opponent kind of a thing.
Right.
And I think a lot of these styles get developed by a certain champion that needs to find a solution to a problem, right? Mm-hmm. For instance, I have that one-handed attack system where I do lots of Ippon seinagis, lots of one-handed attacks in conjunction with my gripping system. Mm-hmm. So I attack the Ippon seinagi, I show the one-arm techniques, the diving gosotas, whatever it is, in order to get my second hand on to then to do second two-handed judo.
Right?
To fight for position while I attack and threaten the one-handed attack so that people feel threatened, therefore I'm more likely to be able to put my second hand on.
Right.
And that was sort of a solution for me when I went to Japan back 10, 15 years ago. Japan's whole thing, they used to always preach this, like, put two hands on the gi.
Mm-hmm.
Two hands on the gi, more control, better throws.
Right.
Like, don't attack with one hand on the gi.
Mm-hmm.
So I would put two hands on the gi and I would get bombed every time.
Right.
So it became this really uncomfortable thing. And I wanted to grip fight. And if I lost that grip fighting match, I was going to get bombed.
Right.
So the solution was, while I was grip fighting, go for Ippon Seinagi. Half the time it wouldn't work, obviously, mm-hmm. Because you can't throw everyone with every throw. But I would be very offensive and then try to put the second hand on. And then if I got uncomfortable, I could cut that hand off and then go for one-handed attacks again. Like back in the day, it was like Kataguma or leg pick.
Right.
So Korea also, I feel, this is just a guess, right? Mm-hmm. You probably had a champion coming through the ranks and they were a little bit shorter than some of their international, follies. Right. And then they started developing this drop style and they had huge amounts of success.
Mm-hmm.
And then they won and then everyone looked up and was like, I want to do that too. And then they started teaching everybody. And before you know it, everybody started mm-hmm. doing a similar style of judo.
Yeah.
I think that's just my guess.
I think that's really what happened. Cause when I learned judo in Korea, so they really start with the, morote seyonage. They teach that first. And then the way they teach it is they have you just squat all the way down, just butt down.
Yeah.
And then that they say, oh, that's how you do it. How you do morote seyonage, just squat all the way and then do it. And then, so I can't remember which champion really started, but even like Chun Gi-young, who is, I think he fought Inoue Kose when he was coming up as 100-kilo world champion. Even a guy, he is actually tall, but he would actually do seyonages on other people. And I think, and also I wrote another thing Korean people do is the one-handed taiotoshi, like off-grip one-handed taiotoshi, right?
Yeah.
And that came about because I wrote an article on your blog actually about him, Lee-won Hee, who was a gold medalist and like a world champion back in the early 2000s. He had to figure, he was a very cerebral guy, and then he said he was a righty, and then when someone was pinning his right hand, he didn't know how to, he had to figure out a solution to, because he said the European players were so strong that he couldn't break the grip.
Yeah.
So he said, let's just use it to do a left-handed one-hand taiotoshi. And then now everyone does it in Korea.
Everybody does it. Yeah. Everyone. And you have to expect them to do that.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. So
even if if I'm going out there and initial hand, right side versus right side, I get that sleeve hand and I'm like, yes, I'm going to do something. They're already going for one-handed taiyo. You've caught me with that one.
Yeah, but I can't really do that at KBI anymore because a lot of people just expect it now. But
it's one of those things. Yeah, it works once, and then it's like, okay, if everyone knows it, But it opens up a lot of other stuff. And it makes them, hesitate.
Right.
And they lose tempo.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what you want to do with that.
Yeah, I think it actually for me works. I hit them more in the competitions than I hit in randori actually.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect if everyone knows what you do.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that, another type of technique that a lot of Koreans do is the reverse seyonage, or the Korean seyonage, they call it. And I think it was really popularized by Cheon Min-ho, who was the gold medalist in Beijing, I think. And he was a very strong 60 kilo guy. And once he just had that one sleeve grip and he could just twist and then just pull you off the ground because he was so strong.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard a rumor that he could deadlift 500 pounds
at
body weight of 130.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I believe that.
That was his thing though. He actually did power judo, although he was in 60 kilo. And another thing, now you can't do it anymore, but in Korea, the traditional style of wrestling is called shirim, and it's getting popular more nowadays apparently. But it's a hip wrestling. Basically, you have a belt around your hip,
it's a belt wrestling.
You start with the belt by grabbing each other's belts, and then you stand up and you try to throw. And because of that, there's a lot of like pickup style, like the kind of like teguruma in judo. So Korean people used to do a lot of tegurumas. Like they'll just go for
the rules change.
Yeah. But you can't see that anymore because of the rule change. Yeah.
That's the beauty of judo, right? Yeah. Because it's a global thing and it has one system, one rule set. Mm-hmm. It's ruled by the IJF. And some people say, oh, they don't do leg grabs, this and that, and all these different things. But it's a great thing that it's a unified sport across the globe. Right?
Yeah.
If you do judo, you do the same, essentially same in air quotes, judo in Germany, Beijing, Cuba, Puerto Rico, like you're doing the same sport, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, each country, like we're talking about now, have different styles, but that's amazing, amazing thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then people could take their own native styles and then influence their national style of judo, which is like, what a cool thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I really think so. Yeah. That. And
the belt wrestling is amazing, man.
I mean, yeah.
It's similar to, we should do it.
Yeah, I know. I love doing that. Like it, my brother and I, whenever we go to the beach, we don't bring a belt out to do shirim. So we would just grab each other's swimming trunks.
Yeah.
And then just go for it. And it's really fun. And indeed, there are some, if people are interested, you can really look things up on YouTube. And
for sure. That's the beauty of that now. Yeah.
Yeah. The Mongolian wrestling, Korean serum wrestling. And people should definitely check out sumo too.
Sumo is amazing, man. Yeah. It's so underrated. Anybody can play it. You just draw a circle on the ground.
Right.
It's like, all right, I'm going to push you out of the circle or make you touch the floor.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Such a simple rule.
Weird rep because they associate it with the fat guys with the diapers and all this stuff. But the mawashi, you grab it and then it's like something else to grab on, except you got the underhooks and the physical like Greco-Roman style thing. It's a fun sport. It's great to watch. I would love to see like a sumo that's done outside of Japan, that's not in with the culture of like eating and getting big and the heavier the better, the fitter the better sumo league. That would be a very interesting thing to see, right? Just like
yoked up
bodybuilder looking dudes doing sumo.
I know that I've seen a short documentary about that, like Americans doing sumo. There's a sumo champion from Mongolia. I mean, obviously he grew up in Japan doing sumo from early age, but he moved here. I think he lives in California, and then he was teaching people. And there's like a, I think there's the women's league and men's league, and they're trying to,
they have a place in the United States.
Yeah.
What I think is tough is like, if you have sumo culture in Japan, which is very, very strict, and you have these sumo stables, they call it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're working up the hierarchy, and the lowest guys have to take care of the higher guys, and they have to cook, and then they have to eat last, and they have all these cultural different things. And then, even if they want to be sort of innovative and be like, I don't want to gain all this weight, I just want to get jacked, so I'm going to lift weights instead and not do all the traditional sumo training stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very, very difficult to do.
Right.
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 Because of the way the hierarchy works.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they learn it like that, and then they come to the United States and they're like, this is the way I learned it, this is the way I'm going to teach it. Now, all of a sudden, it doesn't really cater to the taste of the Western people. And now it's not going to really pick up, and it's not going to be that marketable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which is sort of a shame a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty cool how that kind of a thing, infiltrates judo styles and
mm-hmm. yeah.
Definitely. Really, really interesting. I'm not saying like sumo affects the Japanese judo style, because Japan, the judo is like its own thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's already a big, one thing.
Yeah, it's like its own separate situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if judo was very infantile in Japan, right? If it wasn't as developed and sumo was much more popular,
right,
then you would see much more of a sumo style judo, I think.
Yeah. And I think
sometimes they train together. Like you hear, you know, not a lot of Japanese kids want to do sumo now.
They just don't.
Right. So if you do like go to any university and you look into the sumo team, there's not many people in there.
I see.
Unless you go to a top school.
Right.
But I'm saying like, for instance, like Kokushikan University. Sumo team, like 5 or 6 kids or something. Judo team, you know, hundreds of the best, you know, all state champions. And those guys are all going to beat those sumo guys in sumo.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it's a different type of an athlete.
Right, right.
You know? So,
and you see that this kind of, I think the point about judo being infantile in a certain country and then this huge folk style wrestling is more popular, and then those wrestlers getting fed into the judo system. I've been always fascinated by Georgia, the country of Georgia.
Yes. Yeah.
And they do something completely different because of the style of folk wrestling they have.
Yep.
Where
Georgian wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, they can only grab this vest, right?
Yeah.
Something so they go one hand on the lapel and then over the back grip, right?
Yes.
And that's a good
Google it as I go here.
Right.
Yeah, Chidoba. Yeah.
You've made some videos and you've taught us a little bit, and I know some of us at KBA do that style, because I think it's such an unorthodox grip. I didn't even try to venture into that because I knew that I thought for myself it was too late for me to integrate such a different style into my game.
Yeah.
So I only learned how to defend against it.
Yeah. The range is a little bit different. It's a little bit closer, but you know, it kind of looks like the same similar vest from Mongolian wrestling. You know, it's very similar, right? Mm-hmm. And they both have that lineage from the
the Genghis Khan.
Right? Yeah. And then, you know, I love, here's an example, right? You type in Georgian wrestling, mm-hmm. and then you know, it's mostly just regular folk style wrestling, freestyle wrestling you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's and that kind of style is affected too. But I think mm-hmm. that the Chidaoba affects, it's a lot closer to judo,
yeah,
because of the vest, the, you know, grappling. So it influences judo a little bit more, and those guys are extremely successful,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the judo world, and they have a very, very interesting pickup sort of style,
right?
And different gripping scheme, which is like very, very tricky if you haven't been exposed to it. You know, we had a bunch of Georgians come to the KBI,
yeah.
You know, and every time they come, I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be a tough one.
Yeah, they are very strong, and you know they know their style and they use it very effectively. Yeah. And
I hate people who say like, oh, it's not technical, it's all strength, it's all power. It's like, no, it's technique too. You know, it's mm-hmm. very, very technical. Like it's just, you know, just because it doesn't look like the judo that you do, mm-hmm. you know, it's not technical or it's all strength. Rah.
Right.
You know, like I hate, you know, that kind of a mentality. You know, you mm-hmm. have to keep an open mind. Everything you do in grappling, a lot of it, it's technique too, you know, and sometimes you need to force your way into stuff, force your way out of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the game. That's part of the strategy as well.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then being able to gauge your gas tank. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to force everything, you're going to get tired really quick.
Right.
Right. And then using that sparingly and using that as a part of your overall strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very important.
Yeah. And I know, it's a good point, because I actually had that thought too, like when I saw the Georgian style look like, oh man, they're just forcing their way into things. But it's really not when you started teaching it a little bit. And then when I saw Georgians visiting our gym, there's so much subtlety in that grip. Like you can
very nuanced.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is feel, right? And a lot of these judo cultures, for instance, like Russia,
mm-hmm.
you know, compared to Japan. You know, Japan, you do tons and tons and tons of randori.
Mm-hmm.
Russia, they don't do that much randori. They do a lot more like slow
situational,
playing,
yeah.
flow grappling, situational. And then if you put yourself in a Georgian grip, you know, the counter to mm-hmm. that obviously is you grab the tricep.
Mm-hmm.
So the Georgian grip versus the tricep around the waist grip, you know, and then they just sort of play in there, and naturally they intuitively pick up the nuances of like mm-hmm. the person's shifting weight this way, so I go this and I go that. I block this leg in a certain way to, you know, take the person off their base, mm-hmm. right? All these different types of things are, you know, part of the technique. That's a huge part of the technique.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you can't just discredit that and be like, oh, it's all strength, because right. it's really not.
I think it's...
You know what I mean?
These things all add up. I think it's just a beauty of judo being an international sport, and you just... You can see how the whole sport evolves as more countries join in, and you know, now you see, as you know, Japanese Americans, Korean Americans, we learn the Georgian style a little bit. You know, I also know, you know, I've learned things from my French friends, you know, what they do, and yeah. all, I think this it's a good thing. This diversity is a good thing. You know that. The sport, it will never stay stale in a way. It'll like never stagnant. Stagnate.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff, man. You know, if you look at Russia, right? We're talking about, you know, the Slavic kind of countries, you know, they have Sambo, which is another one. They just take the two most popular styles of grappling, right? Judo and wrestling. And they said, okay.
Let's combine them together.
Yeah. Judo top, wrestling bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
Wrestling shorts, judo gi top. All right, we'll call it a day. You know what I mean?
I know. Very practical in a way. Yeah.
Armbar, leg locks. We don't like chokes though.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's all their
right.
national sport.
They don't right? choke, right? That's such a
yeah. They don't choke. I mean, maybe now they do. I'm not sure.
Do you know
they
the
have combat sambo?
Do you know the rationality behind that? The choke of not teaching chokes.
No.
Maybe they think it's like it takes too long to submit someone, because you do have to hold. If I don't know, maybe
that's
my guess.
Thing?
I'm not sure, but I mean, in a way, joint locks come on faster than chokes.
Yeah,
maybe that's why.
That's true. Oh, I thought you knew and you were telling me.
No. This is a complete guess, but that's because it, you know, it's a. It seems like they're going for the efficiency. And whatnot. Mm. So I
thought sambo was a national sport of Russia. I just googled it, and
yeah,
it's saying bandy is, which is like a hockey.
Oh, I mean, it's like they're always good at ice hockey.
Yeah. Why does everyone tell me sambo is a national sport of Russia?
I mean, there can be multiple national sports. Sambo is popular, right? Yeah.
Sambo's crazy popular. You know what I love about some of these countries, though? Like, for instance, when I, you know, went to Brazil, I would go to these training camps and sometimes these local sports gymnasiums where they would have, like, all these different sports, right? And you have, like, it's like a sports complex.
Right.
You would have the gymnastics team training, and then you would go there for the judo team. There was a weightlifting segment. You know, it's like the Olympic training center,
right.
You know? So I went to this place, Sergipe, and then when we were doing judo in there, it was not all judo. It was like half judo and half Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? And like that is amazing. It's like, all right, we're going to do one round standing, one round on the ground. One round standing, one round on the ground.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you get a national champ over there / world medalist like Flavio Canto, who was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu champ and a judo champ. You know, you have this crazy hybrid style. And once he's the coach and once he's teaching grappling – everybody's gonna have that hybrid style,
right?
You know what I mean? So it's almost like that's how, you know, the national style of judo sort of gets molded little by little. You know what I mean? And sambo is a great example of that,
right?
Because wrestling is immensely popular in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's really cool.
Yeah. So speaking of the, you know, a coach driving, like a champion driving the national style, like. It's kind of now come back home, like in the United States. I know now, you know, with the success of Travis Stevens and Kayla Harris and Jimmy Pedro, all these players, and they've definitely had a huge influence on how judo is practiced here. And you yourself too, you know, you're starting your own system and whatnot. So what do you think about American style of judo? Do you think there's a lot of influence? I mean, America is a huge wrestling country. We have our own folk style wrestling, which is a little bit different than freestyle. So things like that, do you think that those things come up? Or
I, you know, that's very interesting. There's a couple of segments to the answer. Mm-hmm. I don't think wrestling affects judo so much. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a little bit back in the day, but mm-hmm. the American sort of way of life have a very combative way of like judo versus wrestling, judo right. versus BJJ. They had that. So there wasn't a lot of collaboration in between the different styles.
Right.
Right. So there wasn't a lot of people cross training, you know, only recently, I think mm-hmm. people are having a much more open mind and you see mm-hmm. dojos that teach judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those types of crossovers hasn't really, you know, mm-hmm. come to fruition mm-hmm. yet. You know what I mean? But I will say, Jimmy Pedro, who was an Olympic bronze medalist.
Yeah.
Was he bronze? Yeah, he was a world champion.
Yeah.
And he had a dojo in Wakefield, Massachusetts, Jimmy Pedro's judo center, you know, and I used to train there and it was a national training center mm-hmm. and all the best athletes in the United States would go over there and train full time or part time or whatever it was. And mm-hmm. they do national training camps. And, you know, because Jimmy had such success in judo mm-hmm. and a lot of the, you know, I guess the last two Olympic medals were from there, mm-hmm. right? Kayla Harrison's from there, Travis right. from there. And they all learned Jimmy Pedro's judo system, which
right.
is gripping heavy and niwaza heavy mm-hmm. because he felt like, oh, you know what? If we went with the Japanese linked up 50-50, we'll never win that match.
Right.
So it's diligently grip. If the Japanese have two hands on, you strip the grip, you know, mm-hmm. just diligently grip, being in better shape, drag mm-hmm. him to the ground and beat him in niwaza. Someone right. goes for a bailout, goes for sumigaeshi, you split the legs, you pass and you pin him. Right. Yeah. Learning that juji from top real good, drilling right. it over and over and over. So that sort of is shaping American judo, I think. And they even came up with this thing called American Judo System.
Uh-huh.
They have a website, video, yeah. and all that stuff.
yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that is, if they keep going, and right. if the people who have just recently succeeded, so Jimmy Pedro was like the first generation of doing that,
yeah.
and Kayla and Travis and those guys are the second generation. If they keep coaching and teaching judo, they stay in judo and they influence the next stage, mm-hmm. then, you know, and if those guys have more success, I think it really will start shaping the overall look and feel of American judo.
Right.
But even now, because judoka from all across the country who don't have the luxury of training with the best guy or training at a big dojo, they cross train in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and they wrestle.
Right.
And now it's much more of a thing. So right. those guys are going to naturally have better niwaza than sort of the average judo practitioner internationally. Right. right? So I think this is just my guess. I think down the line, you know, you're really going to see Americans starting to take shape and having an American judo style that's specific to mm-hmm. America. But, you know, they're never going to have success internationally unless, you know, the governing bodies really push and right. support the these athletes.
Right, right.
Right, and then that's another thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Americans have some of the best athletes in the world, right? You look at
yeah.
any sort of professional sports and it's like, how come we don't have the same athletes in judo?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, there's not a lot of people doing judo, right? Why is that? You know, and a lot of it has to do with culture and the different organizations that are behind judo,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the people in it. And once we're able to sort of change that and, you know, revolutionize, you know, the training methods
right.
and, right, the right people get on board and, you know, bring more people into the sport, mm-hmm. then you know, you could have a lot of success and then you could see the American style judo really take place because not only are you teaching this new system, you're teaching it to great athletes, right? We mm-hmm. need to pull great athletes,
right.
right? It's too easy to lose the super athlete to basketball or soccer or baseball. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you play baseball? Right. You know what I mean?
You make a lot more money.
yeah. Money. And you know, you get to join a team. Like right. if you're in high school, like you get to, you know, hang out with your friends. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing this, you know? Oh, I'm playing baseball. It's like, dude, I'm playing baseball too.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to like, I'm going to go to judo practice. It's like, okay. Is that like
yeah, what's judo what I mean? Like? Judo chop?
Yeah. You know, you kind of sort of have to be a maverick. You have to be something a little bit unique of right. yourself to be able to go into, you know, not do the after school and mm-hmm. the school provided, you know, the traditional American pastimes, you know?
Right. That's a good point because all these countries that have great success in on the international stage, Japan, Korea, France, you know, Mongolia, you know, all these countries have a structure system on how to bring up this, like how to recruit the athletes and then grow them and then keep them in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure all the different countries have their challenges too.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, you look at Japan, judo is something you do. You know, if you have judo parents, they're going to put you in judo. They have local elementary school programs and, you know, middle school scholarships and high school scholarships. And, it's a, there's a path. There's a clear path to, like, you go through these systems and then you could be a professional judoka, And when you're a professional judoka, you know, you get paid to do judo. And then, you know, if you win an Olympic medal, you know. There's career opportunities. There's a clear path, like a pipeline to the career. Your future's clear. As opposed to when you're doing judo in the United States and you're sacrificing, I don't know, going to college or something like that. You know, what is your path to success in your, you know, late 20s and 30s? There's none. You know, and that's what you see it when you go to a national training center. It's like, what do you want to do after your judo career? And most of the time the answer is, I don't know. I'm just going for it. You know? And it's a risky proposition.
And I know, you know, Korea definitely has, it is not, doesn't have a, as strong of a support structure as Japan does for judo, judokas, but they do have a, they do provide a career path in that, like the most famous judo college in Korea is called Yongin, and you can go to Yongin University and then you can major in judo, and you can also study like securities, personal security and whatnot. So a lot of people actually go, it's like become bodyguards or like security experts and whatnot. So there is a path forward if you don't even, if you, even if you don't make it as a Olympic athlete and whatnot. And I think that's very important in that way. You know, I think on the biggest reason for American success in on the world stage for all other sports is NCAA. I think because if you play these NCAA sports throughout your childhood, you can go to college for free a lot of times if you're good. And I know, like in college, and then all these Olympians are a lot of times, American Olympians are college students that get to train in the best facilities that these huge colleges, state colleges, private colleges can provide. And they'll let you take time off for the Olympics and whatnot. So in that way, do you think maybe getting judo integrated into NCAA, I don't know if that's possible or not, if there's any movement.
I don't think it's possible because we don't have the personnel to support that, I think.
I see.
You know, and even if you said, okay, here's, let's just throw out a random number, right? You're paying $60,000 a year for these coaches now. Let's hire 100 coaches across the all the best universities in the United States. Do we have 100 good coaches?
No,
we don't. And, you know, I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to talk bad about the judo coaches out there, but, you know, for them to teach at a university level and, you know, to keep everyone safe and then trying to produce athletes, right? We're talking about producing international athletes now, not just teaching judo as a educational curriculum. Here's Osoto, here's Tayo. I'm sure tons of people could do that well. But the coach, these young athletes coming in a lot of the times with not that much judo experience and having them do judo safely, it's a big challenge. It's a huge, huge challenge. And I think what happened, you know, over the course of the last 20, 30 years is that, you know, people who learn judo in another country, like for instance, Japan, we did it like this. You know, we had 100 people on the mat and we just made them do live rounds for 2 hours straight. And then you killed each other. And if you got injured, you got injured. And if you couldn't handle it, you don't belong on the mat. That sort of mentality really did leak over here. I think that really kills the sport because people get injured. People can't sustain that level of training. You know, having a really knowledgeable coach that's able to differentiate instruction for each athlete based on their athletic aptitude, I think that's very, very important to grow the sport, period, to keep people in the sport.
The context is different for Japan, I guess, because there has so much
context
depth.
Context is different. I mean, you know, you saw with the old Japanese people, it's like, oh man, when I was young in Japan, like they would hit us with sticks and beat us over the head, you know, with bamboo, you know, and they would leave welts on our back if we didn't do it right. We're not supposed to drink water because it's soft, right? We talked a little bit about it in the last episode. Go check that out. And you know, you bring that over here and then you're doing that in the States. Who would ever pay money to come and do that? You know what I mean? The stakes are different. The context is different. You know, so right now, if they're like, all right, we're going to have judo in a, you know, university, NCAA, I don't think you could do it.
Yeah.
I don't think you could. Actually, maybe, you know, if you get some of the, I don't know, man, it might have to be a whole full blown.
Yes.
And I think there needs to be a grassroots,
right, concerted system. Effort to like grow the base of the good coaches, kind of start with the local levels, and then eventually the sport has to be popular so that the university would want to, colleges would want to.
They're doing this already.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing this like, oh, grassroots judo this and grassroots judo that. It just doesn't work because the people who are in judo running these organizations all have full-time jobs.
Right.
They have full-time jobs. It's not judo.
Right, right.
Right? That makes it very difficult. If you have a 9-to-5 and then now all of a sudden you have to create a curriculum and train staff and train people,
that's almost impossible
to do. We need more people doing judo full-time,
mm-hmm.
Teaching judo full-time. Judo is their career. There needs to be more money in judo because money, you know, you have to have money to be able to hire people.
Right.
Right? And then this is the thing. It's like, oh, I don't really care about money. We're not going to do a contract at the dojo. Everyone gets judo for free. That mentality has to change.
Right.
Because if you have a bleeding business, which is losing money every month, and now you have to work a 9-to-5 in order to support that bleeding business, you get there, you're tired from the 9-to-5, you're bleeding money, you're kind of resentful, you're pissed off, and now you're using that dojo just as a means to beat on your students.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, who's going to, and then you're going to ask that guy to come up with a curriculum to help the grassroots judo movement? It's impossible.
Yeah.
Right? But if you have a successful judo business,
right
and then you have 200 students and the dojo's making money and that's all they do and they don't have a job in the morning and they could dedicate time to creating a curriculum and helping other people do what they do, then now you're talking a different ballgame. You know what I mean? And I think it all starts with getting rid of that judo should be free mindset.
Right.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu isn't free, taekwondo isn't free,
right,
CrossFit isn't free, SoulCycle isn't free. Why not judo? Right, keep the money within the judo community so you could pay people to do it full time. Then you could start really building and developing and then having people sort of spread this way.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, once that happens, you know, there's more money in judo, more people doing it full time as a career, more people teaching it. Mm. And then you could sort of have this collaborative effort. And then you learn from people who have done it already on the international stage. Right. For this example, let's just say like Jimmy Pedro or Travis or one of those guys. Or even me, you know, who did it to a certain level of success, right? And then that could really sort of shape it. And then, you know, you have enough people sort of feeding into this NCAA beast if we could, you know, have enough
right,
to do it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the dream, you know, and I would love to see judo go in that direction. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. Maybe not in this lifetime. Who knows?
It's a challenging task that needs a lot of concerted effort from everyone, like, you know, and you're right, and it's then only then will we find like this American judo identity, I guess, that and it'll be, I mean, we'll dedicate an episode on this topic in the future.
For sure.
It's an interesting topic, and like we have discussed, a lot of international, a lot of countries around the world have done it differently, but they, you know, there are multiple ways to success, and we're hoping that America could find its, American judo can find its own path to success.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I would love to see that, and I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And hopefully maybe, this kind of thing, you know, podcast, doing a podcast. Yeah. Maybe it'll help out in the popularity of judo. In a way.
Yeah.
Hope so.
Do we have any, did we miss any countries?
Let's see.
We didn't cover every country.
No.
We covered Georgia, Russia, France, Japan, Korea. Right. I'm trying to think of any.
Maybe you could go to, we talked a lot about Asian countries and European countries, and then we only talked about the United States and Americas. Maybe, you talked about Brazil. Yeah. How about Cuba?
Yeah.
How about Cuba?
Cuba's great.
Yeah.
Cuba's super athletic, those guys.
Yeah.
I've never met a Cuban judoka who wasn't just a savage,
right,
just unbelievable athlete. I don't know why.
It's
But when you get a Cuban, you're like, man, this guy's going
right.
to be athletic. I fought Despain, who was a world champ,
mm-hmm.
and boy, was he was a monster.
Because if you see, Cuba is one of the countries that has most medals from judo.
Yeah.
And it's right after, I'm looking at this Wikipedia article, Olympic Games, Cuba is in the fourth after Japan, France, and South Korea.
Wow.
And
Cuba has great wrestling too.
Yeah. So I think that I would love to know more about their culture. Maybe they have a folk style, like a wrestling too. Maybe that was influenced because it seems like they are really good at these grappling sports. So for some reason,
yeah.
Or it could be that their national governing body supports.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're on the national team in Cuba, you get taken care of.
Right.
You live pretty good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so I hope this episode kind of introduce you guys to the different styles of judo around the world, and then we encourage you to, you know, check these countries out and then kind of see them for yourself. I mean, now these athletes are all on YouTube, and you can kind of try to see the different styles, like how do Georgians grip, how do Koreans fight, how do Japanese athletes fight, and all that. And then, you know, I think everyone should take that in, and then just don't, you know, try to incorporate all out of these elements together into their own judo. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's important, man.
Yeah.
Lots of different styles of judo out there. Go check it all out. Yeah. That's the beauty of the internet now. You can go on YouTube and check out anything and learn anything.
Uh-huh.
But make sure you consult with your local judo professional. Very important.
Yeah.
Right? Don't want to be going and doing some head bombing, head diving, Uchimata Georgian style, and you never done it before, and you blow out your partner's shoulder.
Right. Consult with your teacher first. Save their sensei first. All right, cool. Any parting words for the
man, everyone, listeners? Please check out my YouTube channel as usual, right? That's it. Like, share, subscribe, all that stuff. Podcast is going to come out every Monday, right? Been live streaming, kind of. I missed on Tuesday, but I've been kind of doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and the support. It has been great. If you have any comments, reach out to us. We have Instagrams. Yeah. We have YouTubes. We have Facebooks.
Yeah.
We have it all. And
Yeah.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Cool. Yeah. And then thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode, guys.